day I was thinking that.
So it's like the same day? Of course, fifth and sixth graders think that all teachers are ancients. So.
Exactly. That's what I tell my students. They say, look, I'm the one that's getting old. You all stay the same age because we always get the freshmen and sophomores. They don't seem that. And then I tell them, they think they're going to live forever at that age. And they don't care.
Well, wait until you meet them 20 years from now in the grocery store and they don't look anything. Well, especially fifth and sixth graders don't look anything.
This is an interview of Eleanor Martin, right, is the name, taken on Monday, March the 17th, 2003. It's at her home at 151 Papaya in the Lower Valley in El Paso, Texas. And the interviewer is Richard Baqueda, and this is for the Bracero Oral History Project at the Institute of Oral History at UTEP. So, Eleanor, if you please tell me your name.
Eleanor Martin.
Is that your maiden name, though?
No, my maiden name was Carlton.
Carlton. And you were born where?
In Allegan, Texas.
Gotcha. Where is that?
That's in Colorado County. The county seat is Columbus.
Okay.
It's between San Antonio and Houston.
Oh, okay.
My father was a railroad agent, so we lived all the way from Houston to Tornillo, up and down the railroad tracks, wherever they needed an agent.
Which railroad was that?
Southern Pacific.
Southern Pacific.
Southern
Pacific.
Well, it was the Texas and New Orleans, TNNO.
And your birthday is?
March 15th, 1932.
Okay.
I was 71 last Saturday.
Related birthday as well. So you went to school in various different places?
Yes, in 1942, we moved to Valentine, Texas Railroad. It was a terminal at that time. It's dead now. But we lived there for 8 years, long enough for me to finish high school.
Oh, okay.
Then I went to college in Denton. It was Texas State College for Women at that time. Now it's Texas Women's University. And I went there 1 year. My parents agreed to pay for 1 year. After that, if I wanted to continue going, I had to find a job and pay for myself. So at that time, between the time that I graduated from high school and the next year, they had moved to Tornillo, which is, 35, 40 miles down the valley. And it's a farming community. At that time, it was, everybody raised cotton or alfalfa.
Did the railroad send him here, or was
it? Yes, he was the agent there. In fact, the depot was two-story, and we lived upstairs.
Do you know if it's still there?
No, it's not there anymore. I don't know what they did with it. It's gone. Now, the one in Fabens, I think, is still there. It's been turned into a residence or something.
Oh, really?
But it's two-story.
Okay.
But we lived upstairs over the depot.
And this was?
1950.
Okay. This was after you had finished high school?
Well, I'd already been in college for a year.
Right.
When I left, from Valentine, when I came home, it was at Tornillo.
So, did you continue your college career anymore?
Well, yes, but I had to pay for it.
Oh, right.
So, I started looking for a job as soon as I got home. And I couldn't, I was 18. I had had my 18th birthday at school. I was only 17 when I went off to college. Well, I couldn't find any jobs. So I agreed to work for a man, just bookkeeping, answering the phone. And I won't say what business he was in, but because it'd be too easy to identify. But anyway, my parents okayed it. And another gentleman heard about it. And he came to my parents and he says, you don't want her to work for him. He drinks all the time. And so they kind of agreed. They were Baptists and non-drinkers. And so the guy that came and talked to them just for the Braceros, because he was keeping books for the whole farm business, the cotton, the alfalfa. Mr. Allison had racehorses.
Oh, remember how big a farm it was? Pretty big.
1,500 acres.
Cotton and alfalfa.
Cotton and alfalfa and a few pecan trees. Now it's nearly all pecan trees. But they just needed somebody to take care of the bookkeeping for the Braceros. And so that meant that the job would last from the 1st of September until the 1st of January, because the cotton was finished then. That's when they, in other words, it would only last while they were picking cotton. So I thought, well, okay, then I can go to school the second semester and summer school. So I made enough money from September to January 1st to pay for the second semester and summer school.
Anyway, what were you studying then? It was Texas Western at the time.
No. At Texas Women's University.
Oh, so you went
back. I was going back to Denton.
I thought you would have been here.
No, because my major at that time was home economics education. And UTEP, Texas Western did not, well, it was College of Mines, didn't offer any home ec classes at all. I would have had to drive to New Mexico State and pay out-of-state tuition. So I couldn't afford that. So I decided just to, and my dad, since he was a railroader, I had free transportation. I had a pass. So I would just get on the train, go to Denton, in the 1st of January, or right after, and go to school that semester and summer school. Sometimes I didn't go all summer. Sometimes I ran out of money, depending on what kind of shoes I liked. But then I would go to work. I worked there 4 years, 1950, 1951, 1952, and 1953. Then I met my husband.
Oh, okay.
And got married.
Was that here or back in town?
Here. He was stationed at Fort Bliss.
Oh, okay.
My sister was engaged to a guy from Fort Bliss, and his car was broke down. So I got home from college last day of August, and they wanted to go out on a date, but his car wasn't working. So they decided that he would get this buddy of his a blind date and use his car. Well, 6 months later, we were married.
Really? 6 months.
So then I didn't work anymore. And I don't know if they had to hire somebody else, or I just don't know.
And your husband's name was?
It was Tex Martin, B.R.
And he was, where was he originally from?
Well, he was from, it was really kind of strange. He was from the same county that my parents had grown up in. So all of our relatives knew each other. It's just that we didn't know each other.
Okay. You have any brothers or sisters?
I have three sisters, all younger. I'm the oldest.
Oh, you're the oldest. Mm-hmm. I see. Well,
so they were all still in school. My youngest sister was in the second grade, and my other two sisters were in high school, and I would work. And the transportation, we only had one car, and my dad needed that. He couldn't let me take it out to the farm and just leave it. So he started out taking me out there and leaving me, and then coming after me. Well, then we found out that the school bus went out there every day and picked up the kids. So I would catch the school bus as he was leaving town and ride all the way to the end of the county, all the way to the end of the county of El Paso County. And then he would start picking up kids on his way back in. And he would let me out right in front of the office.
I see. So the Allison Ranch is way...
It's 2 miles out of Tornia.
Okay. So he
2 miles.
Right. How about on...
Well, on the way back, Dave would have to come and get me. Oh, okay. Because I couldn't leave that early.
Oh, okay.
So I was about 15 minutes later than just adjusted it that way.
So you had a certain work hours that you...
Yeah, I worked from... I was supposed to work from 8 to 5.
Always.
But I got there about 8:15, and so I'd leave about 5:30.
So, I guess maybe the best way to explain would be your typical day.
Well, the braceros, when they came, were issued a ficha.
Right. How were they brought to?
I talked to Elias Bonilla. Uh-huh. I told you about him. His father had the commissary, and they were furnished a home out there, and they lived at the farm, and his father would meet the bus when they brought them from Rio Vista, and they would all get off the bus, and they would be issued, he would issue them a mattress and whatever they needed, and they had a square of little rooms, pretty good size. Yeah, I think some of it's still out there. I'm not real sure. But each room, I think, slept 4 men. And they had cots or probably bunks in there.
Right. Would they give them, like, little stoves or anything? Could they cook in there?
There were stoves in them.
Oh, okay.
But they liked cooking outside. It was around an opening. So all the doors opened onto this opening.
I see.
Like, it's kind of an old Spanish type thing, like a
central square.
Yeah,
or something.
Well, yeah, with these rooms all the way around it, and of course it was like a motel. All the rooms were connected. You know, you had to go in this one area, one entrance, and they would at night, in the evenings after. Of course, you can't pick cotton after dark, so they would have a bonfire out there. Cook and sing, somebody play the guitar.
Do you remember how many?
Most I remember us having at one time was 200, and that was quite a few.
Sounds like financial records in this for all of them.
Well, when they got up every morning, they reported to the cotton fields with their sacks, and they picked 3 times, I think, each field. You know, cotton doesn't all open at one time. It opens at the bottom first and then higher.
Right.
And so they would pick the first picking, and then they'd go back over the same fields again. But when their bags got full, they would take them up to the wagon. There was a wagon that was pulled by a tractor or parked out there by a tractor. And there was a person who stayed at the trailer, and every time they came up with their bags, they were weighed, and they had to show their ficha. You understand? I think it means tag. Yeah, it was a
token or tag.
It was a brass, about the size of a silver dollar. It had a number stamped on it. So each man was given a number, and on this. At the end of the day, they brought me the cards that they had recorded the people's picking on, and it would have the ficha numbers across the top of the card, and under the numbers, it would have how much the sack weighed each time, and I would have to add up all those weights and enter it at the bottom. Then at the end of the week, I would have all those totals to add up, and then I would figure their pay according to that and put money, cash money, in an envelope with their ficha number on it.
I see.
And in order for them to get paid, they would come up to we had a window that opened at the bottom like a teller window. And they would come up there, show me their ficha, and I would give them their pay envelope.
They wouldn't show any other identification, just the ficha?
The ficha. They had to hang on to that ficha because that was the only way There would have been too many Jose Gonzalez's.
That's true. They were paid how much?
Well,
I know it's by the pound, but
I think it was about a penny and a half a pound. You have to remember that this is at the time when 75 cents was minimum wage.
Yes, I know.
So, but most of them could pick somewhere between 100 and 200 pounds a day.
Really?
Yeah. So it's back-breaking work, but and then they would send the money, you know, they would, in the commissary, we had a commissary. Some of the farms did not have commissaries, and they would load all the men into the back of a truck and take them to town. There was a little sort of a grocery store there that they would take them, and they'd buy supplies, food supplies. But we had a commissary, and so they could go in there and get anything they wanted to eat, and he would give me their bills. What they had charged, and I would take it out of the pay before I gave it to them.
Yes.
And most of the money that they got, they sent to Mexico.
How would they send it back?
They sent money orders.
I see. Now, I understand they wouldn't get paid the same. The first picking was?
No, the first, I can't remember on the third picking. I know the first and second pickings, and probably, they may have only picked twice, but they got a penny and a half for those because the bowls were full. You know, it was easy to pick to get the cotton out. But then the last picking was what they call bowlies. They were bowls of cotton that hadn't quite opened all the way, so they were allowed to just take the whole bowl off. And they got 2 cents a pound for that because there were fewer of them. They weren't so plentiful.
Heavier.
They were heavier, but they were not as plentiful. So they got 2 cents a pound for those.
So there was the ranch didn't provide any, like when you mentioned a commissary, I kind of thought maybe they were also provided meals, but they
No. Well, they may have been provided some staples, but they would go and get Cokes and, you know, junk food. Everybody has to have junk food.
Well, I was thinking more in terms of they cook their own food all the time.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I guess for lunch, I can't remember them taking lunch to them at all. So I think they had, like, burritos or something.
They were fixing it overnight.
Yeah.
So basically they worked from, like the old saying, from can to sea to can to sea.
From can to can.
Yeah.
Right.
And do you remember ever talking to any of them?
Well, see, I don't speak Spanish.
You don't speak Spanish, I see.
So, I just, you know.
I was curious if you ever found out. I'm sure you realized it. They were there to help their families to make money.
Oh, yeah, that's why they were there. There was one that came that did speak English, and so they put him to work in the commissary. He stayed. He went back to Mexico and got his wife and came back. So he got his green card. And he loved it here. He just, it was kind of funny. His wife had a baby. And she was from old-fashioned superstitious.
Oh.
So she shaved the baby's head. There's a superstition with the Mexican people down in Mexico that if you shave a baby's head, it will come back curly. And it was a girl. She wanted her to have curly hair. So she shaved her head. And he was so embarrassed. You know, he didn't want anybody to know that his wife was so, what he considered, backward.
And that she would believe something like that.
Yeah.
You don't remember where they were from, particularly?
No. I know that he went to, after the Bracero program ended and he wasn't needed there anymore, he found out that he could make a lot of money in the Pacific Northwest working for a logging camp. And he went up there and was killed when a log fell on him. And he was the nicest guy. He was Carlos.
So basically, add up their totals?
They had an electric adding machine, one of those that just has the, all it does is add and subtract.
No tape, so you can separate.
Oh, yeah. I had a tape. And so if I didn't balance, I had all that tape to go through.
Okay, reconcile.
Yes.
Did you have your own little office?
No, I had there was a sort of a large room when you first went into the office, and then another door, and that was Mr. Allison's office. And they put another desk in there for me.
I see.
And when things got slower, well, he had me helping him with, you know, paying bills at the end of the month and things like that. But most of the time, I just did the Rosero work.
Which would be plenty if there was a couple
of 200, yeah. The head bookkeeper got the mumps. His kids had the mumps, and he took the mumps. He had never had them before. And he was, I don't know, his kids were 12, 13, 14 years old, you know. And he had the mumps. So he couldn't go to the bank for me. And it was time to...
Do you remember his name?
Payday. Yeah, Seibert. Cy Seibert. I don't know what his first name was. And, but see, George Rancic was the manager. He was also Mr. Allison's son-in-law. They're all dead. Riley Allison is the one that they do the Riley Allison Futurity.
Oh, sure, I've been reading those.
Yeah. No, and it's on them.
Oh, here. Okay, yeah. I'm thinking of. Okay.
In 1953, one of his racehorses, Invigorator, came in third in the Kentucky Derby.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was a big deal. And then he brought him back to the farm, you know. Everybody had to go out there and look at Invigorator.
So the bookkeeper would be the one who would go to the bank?
He would go to the bank. But he had the mumps. So I had to take his truck, and it was five-speed transmission, and I had never driven one that you had to put it in reverse by pulling it over and coming down.
Oh, and, I've never learned that.
Well, I didn't realize, you know, I'd always driven a stick shift. I'd never driven automatic. And so I went to the bank in Fabens, downtown Fabens, just parked, didn't think anything about it. Took me 15 minutes to figure out how to get out of there.
Why was that?
Because I couldn't get the truck in reverse.
Okay.
But I had to get $20,000+ in cash, small bills, say, to put in the envelopes.
Was that typical?
No, that was when we had 200. That was quite a bit. And I can remember how nervous I was. With that much money, I'd never had that much money in cash in my hands at one time. And, boy, I drove straight back to the farm. I didn't stop.
Sure.
But if I didn't come out, I had the money counted to the penny before I started. And if I didn't come out exactly right, I had to start looking through those envelopes to see whether I had given somebody too much or too little.
So there must have been an awful lot of change.
Oh, yeah.
Pennies.
Yeah. It was.
Okay,
and my hands felt so dirty when I got through. Money is so dirty.
It is. So you were probably, when was the payday?
I guess it was on Saturday afternoon. I guess it was on Friday afternoon because I didn't work Saturday. So Monday morning I had an extra card, you know, on my desk.
Because they worked.
They worked. They picked on Saturday. Yeah, they picked on Saturday. They did not pick on Sunday. And the Border Patrol was afraid that, and rightly so, that some of the farmers would hire illegal aliens to pick, because that would just mix in with those others, and who would check everybody's ID, you know. So they would the farms to check, and, you know, to see how many were there, because they knew how many braceros every farm had.
Oh, I see. And they could count maybe 50.
Well, they could just estimate, yeah.
Oh, I see.
But Mr. Allison didn't go for that. He was...
Did you all ever check? So basically, you never checked their cards?
Oh, well, yeah, we did. Yeah, when they first came in, they had to have the documentation. But then they were given a feature. And so I didn't have to check their documentation, because if they had that feature, they must be who they said. They were to guard, they guarded those things.
Basically, then, you were just on the payroll end of it.
Yeah.
You never did anything else for the you know, I don't know, like checking documents or anything else?
No, no.
Did you ever, so you never knew the name? Well, yes, I guess you would know that.
Well, I had the name, a list of the names, but the feature numbers were what, you know, with 200 people, you just, you know.
I was just curious if some of them ever came back, like you mentioned, the one.
Yeah, some of them did. For those 4 years, some of them were there every single one of those years. And I got to where I would recognize them, you know. And they were always real friendly, and we spoke to each other, you know, when I was giving them their paychecks, their pay envelopes. But since I didn't speak any Spanish.
You wouldn't have to remember more or less about how much a typical recetter could make in a week?
I just don't remember.
Yes, you figure a penny and a half, and some of them could pick 200 pounds. That would be what? Is that $3?
Yeah,
well.
Yeah. I liked it when they were doing bullies, because I could do that in my head. I could multiply by two in my head.
Yeah. I was just curious about how much they could make.
Yeah. It didn't seem like a little bit then. It now it would seem like nothing.
Well, sure. Save pretty much most of it to send back.
Pretty much. Because they were pretty much taken care of. They had a place to live. They had their basic foods, you know, furnished. And so all they were spending, the ones, there were only a few that would come into the commissary and get Cokes and candy bars and things like that. But most of them were pretty frugal.
So I guess also being that you're out there in a very rural area, even I guess still today, they would stay on the farm the whole time?
Oh, yeah, they stayed on the farm. The only time that they would ever leave the farm is if somebody who worked for the farm took them somewhere. They were not allowed to go, you know. I was talking to my sister yesterday, and she said that she was the one that was like in the second grade when I... came home, and she said she could remember being at the grocery store, and a truck would drive up, and all these guys would get out of the back of the truck and go inside and buy goodies, you know.
The grocery store at Tornillo.
Yeah.
I was just wondering if they ever would buy, like, clothes and things for their families to take back with them.
I don't know. There was no place there to buy anything like that.
What about church? Would they be, was there a church community? You remember, like on a Sunday, where they could go to, I'm assuming,
I just don't,
Catholic.
Yeah, probably.
You weren't there, that's right.
No, I was not there on Sunday, so I just don't know. They may have had somebody come out there. I just know that they, you know, the farmers were afraid. I mean, they really needed these guys. And they weren't going to let them just take off on their own and go somewhere, because they were afraid they wouldn't come back. Yeah. And they really needed them. So.
Did you ever have any, I don't know, complaints or problems?
You know,
fights
as,
over, or
as far as I know, I never heard of any.
Okay.
They all got
really home. Right. That wasn't really your...
No, if that had happened, it would have happened probably in the evenings around, you know, where they're in their living area. But I had never heard the foreman talking about it or anything like that.
And the foreman's name again was?
Well, The manager was George Rancic. And they had a shop foreman, and I can't remember his name right away, but he just worked on the machinery, you know, things like that. And the foreman, I can't remember his name. Now, Zeke would know it, Elias Bonilla. We all call him Zeke. I asked him if anybody called him Zeke anymore, and he says, just the people that knew me then. But he would probably know, and he would probably have heard if there was any trouble, but I never heard of any trouble. And I know some of the farms did send some of them back because they were causing tension, but we never had any. So.
And they knew that if they caused problems, immediately they would be sent back.
That all they would just be taken back over to Rio Vista, and they were sent back.
Right. There is some talk nowadays about that. Well, in Mexico, I don't know if you've heard about this. Some of the expresados from that period are talking about how supposedly at the time when they worked, like Social Security, or there was a certain amount taken out of their paychecks, and now some of them are saying that they want that money that was, do you know anything about that?
See, we didn't have, I don't know. I read about that, and it was said it was an agreement between the farmers to send some of the pay back to Mexico to be held in escrow for them to claim later. Well, we never did that. They got every penny that they earned.
Except for what they had charged.
Well, except, no.
I was curious because there is that.
No, I read that and I thought, I don't, you know, we didn't deal with that. I don't know what the deal was on that. Maybe it was if they had over a certain number of men or, I just don't know.
But you all had a couple of hundred,
yeah. Yeah.
The Allison Ranch, do you remember how long it had been in operation down there?
He homesteaded that land, or, you know, somebody in, you know, in the early 1900s when they were opening up this land for agriculture.
Would that be about the time they built the dams at the river, and maybe that's when more irrigation?
Might have been.
What about some of the others?
Mr. Allison was, how old was he? Oh, I imagine that he was in his 60s then. So that would have been, you know.
Yeah.
But he came there as a young man and claimed that, you know.
And it basically is irrigation. That's what they
did. Well, they had to drill some wells in the 60s because of the drought. I saw in the paper this morning where some of the ranchers are clearing debris and trash and weeds and things from around their wells and getting ready to get them to go in again.
Do you have children? You mentioned Riley Allison. Did somebody take over after Mr. Allison died?
Well, his name was Riley.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know what the L was for. L.R. Allison, but it was Riley.
Okay.
His son-in-law took over. His wife died. He only had one daughter. He was divorced. His ex-wife was murdered.
So,
okay. His ex-wife was murdered and found in the trunk of a car that was parked at the airport. But they'd been divorced for quite a while, and they had one daughter. And she was married to George Rancic, so he was the manager of the farm. They had five children. Four boys and a girl. She had four pregnancies. One of the pregnancies was a set of twins, a boy and a girl. Two of those boys have since died in accidents. But she died, oh goodness, 1950, I'd say 7 or 8, way back. She had an intestinal blockage that, and she died.
So who runs that? Is the farm still there? Is it in operation?
The farm is there, and it's still in operation, and I really don't know who's running it, but two of the boys of her sons have a recording studio in the old home. And they do recording. I mean, it's, according to what's been in the paper, it's a very state-of-the-art recording studio. And so if there's any pictures or anything, they would probably have access to them. But George Vancic is gone. His wife's gone. Allison's gone, Zybert's gone, you know.
Do you remember any of the other ranchers around? Some of the names, maybe.
Are you familiar with the name Jim Bowden?
No. Well,
he was.
Is this a new type?
Yeah, that's him. Okay. Jim Bowden. He worked on the farm next door. You keep saying ranch and their farms. The farm next door was his father-in-law's, and he would come by and visit with us once in a while on his way to go somewhere, and he wanted a few minutes to goof off.
They had bracelets, everybody had bracelets.
Oh, I'm sure they did. But now he's getting kind of old. He's probably 80. I think he's still living, though. But he was a big football star at UTEP. Well, College of Mines. So he would, you know, and maybe his kids would remember.
So, just to get back, you know, a couple more things to think about your role is basically you were a bookkeeper. Is that how you would?
Bookkeeper.
Was there any other duties? Like, did you have to, like, prepare some kind of a monthly statement, or?
Well, if I, like I said, when picking, you know, when I got through with my work earlier, because they weren't as many, and I guess that when by the time the end, some of them had left because they weren't needed. And so I would help with, you know, paying the bills and things like that, just doing regular bookkeeping.
Well, I was just thinking in terms of, say, would you have to prepare a monthly statement? Like, this
is
not special here, right?
No.
No?
No. I just figured up how much they picked and paid them.
It was
an all-day job every day because, well, the thing about it was that I needed to finish that the previous days by the end of that day, because otherwise I would have had too much the next day. So every morning when I got there, those cards that they had used at the wagon were on my desk and ready for me to work on.
So you couldn't afford to get sick and miss a day.
No, I never did. You know, I never did get sick.
And also, was there just one field where they would be picking, or would there be?
No, they were all over the place. So I would have more than one card. Right. Each wagon would have a card.
Sure.
And different people, different numbers, you know, for each wagon.
The men that weighed, what were they called? Were they just supervisors, or were they the layers? Were they the team member if they had?
They were usually women.
Okay.
Like the foreman's wife. You know, people like that. That was gave them a little extra money during cotton season.
So they would also be paid just for weighing?
Oh, yeah. Sometimes they would have a line of men waiting to get, you know, to get weighed.
Once the cotton, the sack was weighed, it'd have to be emptied
into the
dumping
dump it into the...
Oh, I see. I'm thinking in terms of, well, I've seen some, the trailers that have with the high...
That's them.
One of those.
Slats on the side and cops sticking out through the cracks.
They seem kind of high and it would be...
No, she would have a, she would be on a platform.
Oh, okay.
And the scale, and so they would hang the sack on the scale for her. She would put down whatever the... Have you ever seen a cotton scale?
Yes, I have. As a matter of fact, my mother grew up on a ranch, the Ivy Ranch, down here. Near where my high school is now.
Oh, okay.
And I remember being very, very young.
Uh-huh. Well, I have one out here.
Yeah, I'd like to see it. It's been a while since I've been. As a matter of fact, I remember my mother saying that she would sometimes, if she would pick, she would play.
My husband collected all kinds of old tools and horse collars and
harnesses.
Reins and harness, you know, all that kind of stuff that nobody uses anymore. And he knew all the names for everything. And we have some shoe lasts that my grandfather and his great-grandfather used to make, they mended their own shoes out on a farm.
Wow. That's,
couldn't take them to town.
No, I would like to see that scale. So, there would be several of them then going on.
Oh, yeah, there would be a, there would be a line of men, and so they would put their sacks on a hook. It's a hook, and then it pulls down, and then the number that it stops at.
Right.
Yeah. So then they would dump it into the wagon, and if, when the wagon got full, the tractor would take it away or bring an empty one, and then at the end of the day, the tractor would take them all to the gym.
Which was close by.
In Tornillo.
Yeah. I've seen.
Well, there's a new gym there now, but...
It's a lot more automated, mechanized these
days. Oh, yeah. But this was the kind where you parked the wagon under the vacuum tube, and the vacuum tube vacuumed all the cotton out.
Right. Yeah, I remember, well, see, I grew up in this land, and I remember near the old mission.
Mm-hmm.
Right now there's a parking lot for the casino.
Yeah.
I remember a cotton gin right there across the street from Zaragoza.
There were several down on the, on Zaragoza, not Zaragoza.
North Loop.
San Rosario.
Oh, okay.
That road, the Coral Road, isn't it? Yeah. Isn't that the name of the street?
Yeah.
And there were several out there.
So, just a couple of other things. When you got married, you said you didn't work there, so
no.
After your marriage, were you, did you...
Well,
raising the family, or...?
We lived at the Broadway Courts in Fabens for 3 months. And then he worked for, he was waiting for Texaco to put him on. And he worked for Texaco for 32 years.
Wow.
And we've lived in this house for 47 years.
Wow.
So,
so this area is that old, that this development, this particular...
When we bought this house, there was no mail delivery. We had to go down to the post office that's now Alamo Auto Parts or something down at... Ascarity and pick up our mail.
Yes, I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
It's just this side of Fox Plaza.
Yeah, it's on. It's by Clark, I think, Street. But there were no houses. The next two blocks were just bare. And so we watched them build those houses.
And the river is right here, so you probably could walk over. Could you just walk over?
Well, there weren't any houses over there.
Right.
See, on the other side of this irrigation ditch here, there were no houses. My grandparents came to visit us one time, and my husband and my grandfather took the, I guess, .22 rifle and went hunting down on the river. You know, and my grandfather thought that here we lived in a city. And this is so neat, it's like being in the country.
Yeah. What did they hunt? Do you know, was it rabbits?
I don't think they saw anything. Oh, they just took the gun in case they did.
So all of a sudden now you're in the middle.
Middle of the city. And people are always saying, what are you doing in this area? speak Spanish. And I say, well, I was here first, and they all came, and I like them, so I stayed. We have the best neighbors. Everybody on this block has been here. Most of the people on this block are the original owners of the house. So.
Now, I guess what are they? Their children are?
The people next door, they moved in about 3 months after we did. They bought their house and moved in. So now they're living with their youngest daughter and her husband and two of her kids. And so all of our grandkids know each other.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, anything else?
No. I had a feature. I wish I...
Well,
I don't know where it is.
If you ever find it, you've got my phone number. You can call me. I guess one way to add...
Now, I don't know whether all the farms use that method or not.
Right.
And I see in the shop, it was like a blacksmith shop, too, you know. And so he could have made them, but I just don't know.
Where they got them from.
Yeah, where they got them.
It sounds like a pretty efficient...
It was really efficient because those guys just, they had to... I think most of them put them on it. They had a hole in the side. They were about the size of a silver dollar, had a number stamped on them, and they had a hole. So they could put them on a string or anything and just put them around their neck and didn't have to worry about getting them lost. Because they knew that those were their ticket to get paid.
Sure.
And
for everything.
Yeah, for everything.
And I don't remember if you mentioned, do you remember how much you were paid?
You know, I can't remember. I still get a statement from Social Security telling me how much. And, of course, the first couple of years that I worked there, farm workers did not have to pay Social Security. So they didn't take any out. Then they started taking it out. But I just can't remember. It was around $600 for that September through January. Yeah.
So overall, you look back on it and good memories.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I was laying there thinking about it. They have discontinued so many of the pesticides that they used to use, DDT.
Sure.
You know, they've discontinued them. And when I was working out there, they would hire a plane to fly over and crop dust.
Sure.
And I would get out there, and the smell of that, for a long time after I quit working out there, if I smelled that, it was kind of a homesick feeling. Isn't that silly?
Well,
but it triggered a nostalgic feeling. And it was,
there's certain aromas that like a kitchen or something. The only problem with what you're relating is that it could be dangerous because you never know.
It was probably harmful.
Sure.
But to me, it was smelled like home.
It triggered certain memories on your mind. Well, anything else?
I really enjoyed working out there. I really did.
So you were happy that this other man came along and took you with
him?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
The first job.
I wouldn't have enjoyed working with somebody that was drunk all day long. I imagine he was probably harmless, but just the idea that, and I would have been the only one there with him. And out at the farm, Mr. Allison was there off and on. He had, he rented the penthouse of what's now the Plaza Hotel. He had the penthouse so that if he had people, business people, horse racing people, or he and Clinton P. Anderson were real good friends. He was a senator from New Mexico. And so he had the penthouse there so that he could entertain and had a place in town where he didn't have to drive all the way out to the farm with them.
So it sounds like this was a money-making, I don't know, not not that much money, but enough to where he could
buy
his
horses.
So.
Well, he also had half ownership in a lumber place with Clinton D. Anderson. Like a...
an investment kind of thing.
Yeah, you know, it was like a Lowe's or Home Depot or that kind of a store.
A lumber supply.
Yeah. But they had a partnership in that. The first time she walked in the door and Mr. Seibert was not there, he looked at me and says, "Get Clint on the phone for me." Had no idea who Clint was. So I waited until Mr. Seibert came back in, you know. I said, "He wants us to get Clint on the phone. Who is that?" So he filled me in. After that, I knew to get Clint.
I did think of something else I meant to ask you. But Garmillo at the time, how many people would you?
I don't know, but the railroad was pretty busy. They had a platform where they had all the cotton bales to be shipped out. They also, my dad also shipped out cattle. There was a place where they held the cattle and loaded cars. I just don't know.
What about Fabens?
Well, it was the big city, you know, for us. We went to church in Fabens because the Tarnia didn't have, I would say maybe Tarnia was around 450 people at that time. But I don't really know.
And how often did you come further up the valley, say, to El Paso?
We didn't come to El Paso very much.
Pretty much everything you needed.
Until we started dating.
Oh. That's where you
then we went to the Bronco or the El Paso drive-in or see all the drive-ins.
Yeah, I remember the Bronco and some few others.
And over here where that high-rise senior citizen building is, the El Paso drive-in was there.
You know, I've thought of it. That would be, let's see, it's the other side of Bassano, isn't it?
Yeah. No. I think
it's the other side of the freeway.
Yeah.
Between. Is that, no, it's not Bassano. Is it? It goes up. It's near Bassett. And I remember that there was a drive-in, but I couldn't.
Well, the Bassett Center at that time was not in existence. Do you know what was there?
No, I sure don't.
A gravel pit.
Really?
It was a place where the cement trucks were in and out. I guess it was El Paso sand and gravel.
See, no, that I don't remember. I remember the drive-in, the one you mentioned, and I bet I've forgotten the name.
Yeah.
El Paso. Did you ever go to the Rio Vista at all?
The farm? Just
where the Braceros came from?
Went by there. I never went to the, you know. You were just knew it as I went by. But I had no reason to go out there. That was the man's job, you know.
Well, I thought maybe he might have been curious.
No.
I'm asking this question of everybody I've been interviewing, but the weather, what was it? Do you think today's weather, is it warmer than it was? Do you remember more snow, more rain in those days? Colder?
I don't remember very much rain or snow at all then, because during cotton season, that would have been catastrophic.
Sure.
They couldn't pick that day.
And besides, you were gone at school.
I was gone from January to around the 1st of August, anyway.
But at other times when you were here, do you remember?
Well, when I first came to Tarnio, I came home from school, I guess the last of May, and came home on the train, and I'd never been to Tarnio before, but I'd been living in Denton. Well, in Denton, you have to have a raincoat, you have to have rain boots, and you have to have an umbrella, carry all that stuff with you all the time because we had ice storms and rain regularly. Well, I got to Tarnio, and July the 1st, it started raining. It rained every single day in July, and the only way to get the mail was to go to the post office. So I got elected to go to the post office every day. And people would just stare at me. I was the only person in
it's all the right equipment.
It's the right equipment. But otherwise, you know, I can't really remember that the weather was all that much different
than it is today. What about wild animals? My mother talks about how when she was young, she could remember hearing coyotes.
Oh, we could hear coyotes every night. Every night. Of course, we were living on the railroad tracks upstairs above the depot, so we had, you know.
And you've got, I'm not sure exactly where the railroad line runs and where the depot is.
Well, across, right on the other side of the tracks was a barbed wire fence and bare ground.
Hills, the hills.
Yeah, nothing. Sand hills.
Yeah. So you would be able to.
Oh, yeah. We heard.
Any other kinds of river? Because sometimes, well.
I don't remember ever seeing any come up there, you know, close enough to see. But we'd hear them at night.
My mother talks about that. I've never heard one.
No.
Now, of course, down there.
Yeah.
I live down near the Rio Vista.
Oh, really?
So, familiar.
And you've never been down to Torneo?
Well, would you believe my mother was born in Torneo?
Well.
And
did she go to school there?
No. Then they moved to Wissler.
Oh, okay.
My father was a foreman at the ranch where their Valle High School is now, the farm. Sorry,
yeah.
I say ranch. The farm where their Valle High School is now.
Was that Ivy's?
No, it was Rosenblum was the man's name.
Oh, okay.
And Spence. Uh-huh. And across, a little bit over, was where the Ivy farm was.
Because I knew some of the Ivies. You know, there's a bunch of Ivies down there. Yeah.
We have a family friend now who has a farm down near their past domain.
You know, now instead of raising, there's still quite a bit of cotton down there. We, my husband died a year ago, but we had a motorhome, and there, while they were working on the freeway, they had all the lanes narrowed and everything. We would drive all the way to McNary to get on the freeway.
Oh, yeah.
And drive through the Thor Valley just because we liked the drive. And there's a lot of chilies down there now. And see, there weren't.
And pecan groves.
Oh, a lot of pecans.
This family friend that we have, his name is Chavez, he grows cantaloupes and chilies and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Well,
now, Allison, he had alfalfa and cotton. And what he would do is he would grow alfalfa on a field all about 3 years. And they would plow it all under and plant cotton there for a few years. And he would rotate the crops that way. He was very, very smart land management.
Remember what kind of cotton it was, do you? I know there's a difference.
Well, it was, at first it was regular cotton, then he started putting in Pima.
Which is that the short?
It's a longer staple.
The longer staple.
Longer staple. The short staple cotton is what he had the first year I was there. But then he started putting in the Pima. And
the advantage of the Pima, the long staple?
The cotton, the manufacturers of cotton cloth want Pima because it's a longer staple.
I see.
And it makes a softer fabric.
Oh, okay.
The funny thing was that when I met my husband, his father was a farmer. He was raised on a farm. But down in Gonzales County, where they have to depend on the rain, no irrigation of any kind. And they raised cotton when he was growing up, and he had to pick cotton, you know, so we had a lot in common. And he said he went home and told his dad that we had 2 to 2.5 bales per acre down here that the cotton was producing. And his dad did not believe it because they were doing good to get a fourth of a bale off of an acre. Well, you know, it was just, not, they had to wait till it rained. And so since it didn't rain very much, they just didn't get very much cotton. And so he came all the way out here on the train when he found out that his son had gotten engaged to some girl out here that he'd never seen. So we took him out there and showed him the cotton fields, and he said, convinced him by showing him that it just, it was because they were watering.
The water. It's like, yeah, it does make quite a difference.
No, yeah. And they know exactly when to water, too. If it rains at the wrong time, they get a little upset.
Oh, yes, I know, because, well, I live.
Yeah.
The area is, there's cotton fields around. Onion fields now, sometimes.
Yeah, a lot of things down there. And a lot of, it's not, I don't think it's, yeah, because it's maize. Like, a lot of
maize.
Yeah, a lot of maize.
For feed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I remember a few years ago, right at the corner of Southside of Medica's, there was a sunflower field. I don't know if you ever saw
yeah.
That. That was very unusual.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen it since. It was very
unusual. Well, see, they, you were asking if I did anything else. They would bring in, at that time, nobody in this area grew maize, milo maize. And so they would have to order it from up around Lubbock. And they would bring it in a truck. And one time, they brought Hygira instead of milo, which is a different color, green, and didn't have the same nutrients that Mr. Allison wanted. And so when they saw that it was the wrong color, they told me, telling him that not to unload, send him back, that's the wrong stuff.
What was the name of it again?
Well, Hygira. It's just a different kind of maize, yeah.
So
one of them is red and the other one is real light tan.
Oh, I see. So he was using it partly.
Well, he was feeding cattle.
But also as a nutrient for the ground?
No.
Just
for
the cattle?
Yeah,
okay.
But he wanted the cattle to be
better.
Healthy, yeah. He didn't. And he was paying for that truckload, and he wasn't going to pay that for that other stuff that wasn't as good as what he had ordered.
I don't blame him.
So there was, you know, that's where they would come if they had a delivery of anything like that, come to the office. But most of the time, Mr. Seibert was there, and I was, I was busy with the payroll. I got so good on that adding machine that I didn't even have to look, you know, it's just like touch.
The touch of the fingers,
yeah.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
But
that takes a lot of practice, though.
But you ask about what I did later when my youngest child went to the first grade. I started substituting. And I found out how much work that was. So I went back and got my degree at UTEP. But I had to change my major to elementary education. So I graduated from UTEP in 1970.
Okay. And you taught at what school?
I taught at Thomas Manor 1 year and Riverside Elementary, which is now Tejas Academy of Choice. I taught there 9 years. Then they closed the school. And then I taught at Cedar Grove. So I stayed in the neighborhood.
Sure. What grade was it?
Fifth and sixth. Well, I taught third grade at Thomas Manor. That was enough. 1 year of the third grade is enough for anybody. When they throw up on the desk, and don't say anything. You know.
You wanted them a little older than.
Oh, yes.
Fifth and sixth, that's, I guess, that's, they're not quite the rebellious.
No, they're just beginning to notice that there's another six in the room. But I enjoyed them. Really
so
did.
Then you worked for how many years as a school teacher?
17.
17 years.
The reason I retired when I did was because my husband was retiring. And we wanted to travel in the motorhome. And there was no way I was going to leave him at home by himself and work 3 more years.
Oh, I see. So you wanted to work 3 more years to get, what, 20 years?
Yeah.
I see.
You get the maximum, and you get your full retirement at 20 years.
20. I see. Did you get to travel, sir?
Oh, yeah, we did. We've been to the Pacific Northwest and all over Texas.
Well, anything else you wanted to?
No.
Well, if you think of anything.
But I do want you to call Elias Bonilla because he
has
yeah, because he said his dad would wake him up at 2 o'clock in the morning to go down there and, you know, when they brought him in. So evidently they came in